What I want to do is go through and show you who our adversary is and how he works and how you and I can resist and overcome him. Now, to get the first mention of him, as God has inspired the Bible to be written, we have to turn back to Genesis. Although over in Ezekiel, you get a better understanding of what Satan did and the controversy that he had with God the Father. Here in Genesis, the third chapter, we'll see what kind of being it is that you and I are fighting. Because we are in a battle. We are in a war. Now, if you don't believe that after I get done with the sermon, then I don't think you'll be around too much longer. Because we are in a battle, and we have a super strong spirit being that we are warring against. Now, we've had a number of motion pictures that try and depict this circumstance that we read here in chapter 3 of Genesis, where Eve is supposedly, you know, this apple is given to her, or it's on a tree or something, nice big red apple. And there's this snake always around. It's either in the tree, or it's in the grass, or it's somewhere around, or it's some, you know, hideous-looking reptile. And this is what we're often presented with. Well, let's read here and see what God has to say. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. Now why does God call Satan a serpent? Well, he's calling him a serpent because he has qualities like God has instilled in serpents. Qualities to stalk, to go ahead and figure out how you can connive and destroy the prey that you're after. And of course, all animals that are carnivorous, you know, that eat flesh, they have to figure out how to catch and kill and devour other animals so that they can have self-preservation. So they want to survive. So this is what they do. They are gifted with abilities to know how to cunningly stalk or lay in wait, camouflage themselves. And if you've ever watched any National Geographic films, you've seen some of the animals and some of the things that they're able to do and how they are able to go ahead and devour the other animals. Well, God is bringing out here that the serpent was more subtle. In other words, he had abilities where he was able to deceive whatever prey that he was interested in devouring. Now, unfortunately, you know what the prey is that he'd like to devour? You and I. It's what he wants to devour. And he is more subtle than any of the beasts. And God expects us to look at the beasts and see how subtle they are, to see how gifted they are. And if you've ever had any run-ins with, you know, a rattlesnake, I think that, you know, you have a healthy respect for snakes. Well, this is the chiefest of them. Now, you may hear me refer to him as a snake. And, of course, the appearance of a snake is obviously hideous. Now, somewhere along the line, I think that Satan has perverted himself. He has perverted himself spiritually, and whatever form that he would like to take upon himself is perverted. It is not the way God originally created him. Now, we don't know how long it was ago that he rebelled against God and has subsequently gone his own way. But you will notice that people who live a wretched life, a hard life, who are involved in hard times, you can tell it by just looking at them. You know, here's an alcoholic, for instance, who's a skid row bum. Well, their skin becomes wrinkled. Their face, you know, they look like they're 10, 15, 20 years older. Or maybe, you know, if it's an old sailor, you know, he's been around. He's been to all the ports. He's had all the women in the world. He's drank all the booze that you could imagine. And he's lived a hard life. You can tell it on that individual because they are perverting themselves. And even certain races who have gotten away from contact with Israel. Now, this is just the way it's happened. It doesn't mean that that race in itself is a you know, a degenerate race and God is not going to work with them. He just worked with Israel. And they have the knowledge and the truth and the blessings that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But you see those races who have gotten way far away, like the pygmies. I don't think God intended for, you know, the pygmies to be little people running around. And you look at some of the Indian people here in the United States. Unfortunately, due to their sins of generation after generation after generation after generation, of perverted diets, of getting into demonism, and all of their wretched lifestyles, they have perverted themselves to where they have very little character because of the environment. Now, when God heals that race, their mind, they'll have the same opportunity that you and I have. But you can pervert yourself, is what I'm trying to bring out, and consequently, you look perverted. Now, I don't believe that Satan at this time would come on the scene and present himself to Eve as a snake. How many of you ladies would talk to a snake? Well, I don't think you'd talk to a snake. Or, you know, it's a serpent, some type of reptile, some type of lizard or snake or something like that. I mean, if that's really what he transforms himself to look like, I think it would be an unwise choice. I don't think his credibility would be too high. Do you? I just don't think so. I think he looked good when he came on the scene. He walked out, you know, he probably looked as good as I do. Now you think, oh, well, you know, that guy, maybe he is, you know, representative there, so watch out. But, no, he's looking good. He walks out. Yeah, how you doing? You know, nice clothes on. I don't know, maybe he walked out naked because, you know, that's the way Adam and Eve were at the time. And you figure, well, you know, here's the Garden of Eden nudist colony, and I'll just go ahead and walk out naked so, you know, she won't notice I'm any different. And so, who knows, standing there naked talking to this gal. And I just don't believe that it was some scary-looking animal that crawled up there and started, you know, wheezing and sneezing at her. Because this being was able to talk to an individual who had just had how many conversations with God, the God that had created her, created all of the earth. Now, question comes about, well, when did this take place? Was this Sunday morning? Was this, you know, God created the heavens and the earth, and then Sabbath, he talks to him and says, okay, Adam and Eve, now listen, you're alive. Hey, okay, I'm alive. Gives him a little bit, you know, I mean, some of the questions that you would have the first day after you're alive. You looking at yourself? I mean, you're going to get oriented. You're going to ask a lot of physical questions. You know? I mean, you just are. Now, I can't imagine that it's the next morning that, you know, the snake comes along. I mean, I don't think that Adam and Eve were really prepared to meet this super fantastic demon that had already previously led one-third of the angels in rebellion against God. Would that be fair to you? Present, you know, here, okay, now you go one-on-one with Satan. God had already seen his subtlety, had already seen that he was sly enough to get one-third of the angels to rebel against God. I just, in my mind, I can't see them next morning, here they are, say, hi, how you doing? And trying to reason with this super archangel. No, I think what we have here is something on down the line. After God had instructed, worked with, educated, trained, prepared these people to live on this earth the way God would live in the flesh if he were human. And then comes along this brilliant demon. Now, I have to believe that God had already told them, look, don't even let this demon talk with you. Don't even be around it. So how did the demon, super fantastic archangel, get Eve to even have an audience with him or it, because it's an angel? Had to captivate her some way. Had to be so dazzling for her to say, look, this is unreal. I've got to talk with this super brilliant being. Now, we'll go over to Ezekiel, and we'll find out that when God created the angelic world, this was number one. This was the top of the line. It was the most beautiful, the most talented. Now, if you've got all those talents, what are you going to do? You're going to bury them and leave them at home and show up as a snake slithering around in a tree and trying to get a hold of this woman's attention? No, you're going to put your best foot forward. And, you know, nickname I give Satan sometimes is Mr. Slick. I think of him as being Mr. Slick. I mean, really looking good, really able to dazzle this woman. Probably very handsome. A really good-looking guy. You know, once again, they can transform themselves into a physical form. In this day and age, we don't see that. Where, you know, you got a demon walking around that is a physical manifestation. God does not allow that for some reason. And that's fortunate, you know. If we could see the angelic world, you know, we might be a little bit distracted. Oh, hi, guys. How are you? Oh, yeah, there's one over here. And we'd even see the angels that God puts around us to protect us, you see. And there would be thousands of those. So fortunately, we don't know they're around. They are there. And they could at this time, God allowed it, manifest themselves. So, like Christ, for instance, after he died on the stake there, and he was in the grave 3 days. Remember, he was resurrected. He'd gone to his Father in heaven and returned. You read that, I think it's the end of Matthew, or Luke, I'm not sure. And here were his disciples going down the road, and he walked up to them, walking along with them, and they didn't know who in the world it was. So it was a different form. The way he didn't look the same as Christ looked previously, or else they would say, well, hey, here's Christ. So they can change their form some way, and we have a very beautiful being that presents himself. And the big problem is Eve reasons with Satan. And there was no contest. There was no contest. She was not able to out-reason Lucifer, who has now his name has been changed to Satan. She wasn't able to convince herself that he was wrong and God was right, because of the line that he gave her. Now, we just have a paraphrased, you know, if that's all they said, you know, she must have really been a dumbo, you know. I mean, she must have really been simple. And I don't think that was the case. Because that's all, he said, no, God didn't say that. God did say this, but really that's not true. Oh, you know, pretty naive, if that's all that went on, if that's the whole dialogue. I think there was a lot more to it. I think they sit down and had a nice conversation, he explained a little bit about things, and when he got his opportunity, he unloaded on her. God's unfair. See? Because what did he do? He says, yea, hath God said in verse 1, well, just, you know, the expression, yea, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Well, why would God say that? I mean, God's withholding something from you. I mean, boy, that's unfair. I mean, God is just, you know, he's unfair. And I have to picture that the same thing took place with the angels. You know, and it took place, oh, once again, you know, he's subtle. I mean, subtly is, you don't come on heavy, you don't come on strong. So it took place over a period of time. Oh, you drop a little comment, you know, a little blurb here and there. Well, fellas, we got some... We got some problems, but I'm trying to work them out for you, and I'll be talking with God about these injustices that I think we ought to resolve. Time goes by. God's just a little bit busy. He's going to work on that later on, and I don't know if we'll ever get anything done on this issue or this matter. But I'm trying to get something accomplished here. I'm interested in your benefit and your welfare, fellas. I'll try my best. And you throw in a little dig. Well, that seems a little bit unfair to me, but hey, listen, we just need to really tough it out, hang in there, and everything will work out, fellas, later on, you know. only problems like this come up, you know, when you're an angel and you got a God that's created you, you're going to have problems like this. And it goes on, and it goes on, a little dig of disloyalty here and a little bit there. And pretty soon he gets to the place where he says, now, fellas, I tried all I can try. I think that God he's lost control. He does not realize the problems that we're having and the injustices that we're going through and how hard it is on us. And, you know, angels could have been in good shape, having a great time, blessed manifoldly by God. And, you know, it talks over in Jude that they left their dominion, their estate, what responsibility they were supposed to have. They left it. They didn't want it. They didn't want to do the job God created them to do. And they said, it's unfair. It's unfair. I need more. I want to do something else. So they left it, and they went and rebelled. They were going to try and tackle something that they would have been miserable doing. So they were probably really happy, but you know what happened? They got Lucifer to convince them that they weren't happy. And he convinced them, and he said, no, you're in bad shape. I'm concerned about you, and I want to help you, and I just want to give you what is justly yours. And they fell for it. One third of them fell for it. And they went along with his scheme and his idea to ascend and take over God's throne, as you read about in Isaiah 14. And of course, it didn't work. Just didn't work. So this being we're talking about is able to outreason any human being. Outreason all of us put together. That's why God is very specific when he says, look, when you understand the truth, you just stay with the truth. You don't reason with other ideas and philosophies and concepts. You just stick with the truth. And we'll get into some scriptures that are very plain about how to handle other ideas, other reasonings that come along. Ezekiel 28. Notice the perfection that was in this tremendous being that God had created. And God's using the analogy of a king to try and help human beings to get the proper perspective here. And he was using the analogy of Prince of Tyre, who was very wealthy and very intelligent. And of course, Tyre fell, the king fell in history. And the tremendous wealth that had been accumulated by this, it was a seaport town is what it was. And all the trade came through that town. Now you'll find in history throughout the Bible, all right, which is a key principle to remember when you're reading the Old Testament, that a lot of the wars, a lot of the problems that Israel ran into was because of wars over trade, all the trade routes, where the commerce was going through. And who has control of the commerce has control of the power. You know, the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. And that's the way it was at this time. So here was King of Tyre who was living good. Living good. He had the gold. And he had beautiful, beautiful palace and grounds. And he lived in opulence. And a very competent individual. He knew, look, trade goes through here. We take a little bit. Appreciate doing business with you. Glad you could use our seaport. You know, that will be a tariff on that of such and such. And the analogy goes on to show the brilliance and beauty and the excellence that this king had is the same that God had created in Lucifer before he fell, before he decided he wanted to rebel until iniquity entered into his heart. Ezekiel 28, and notice in verse 11, moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus says the Lord God, you seal up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. That's an analogy of this king, physical king, and of course, as you go through, you have to understand that it's talking about a spirit being, because no one has those physical qualities. So it's obvious the analogy is very clear here. So here was a being that sealed up the sum full of wisdom, very wise, able to think, plan out, very wise, could see on down the road, plan out things well in advance, was able to make wise decisions. And God put him in a very responsible position. and perfect in beauty. Now, it goes on to describe the beauty of Lucifer when he was created. And it says here in verse 13, you have been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. And it goes on to show that he was a covering cherubim, high in authority, right around God's throne, had personal dealings with God constantly, all the time. One of the top aides to God in carrying out what God was involved in at that time. Which, once again, in the Word of God, it's not exactly clear as to how all of that fit together. But we know that he had a very responsible position. He was beautiful. And, of course, you notice at the end of verse 13, it says, in the day that you were created. So here, it's obvious it's talking about a created being. Verse 14, you are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so, and you were upon the holy mountain of God, and you did walk up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Right at the headquarters. Right there at headquarters. So being at headquarters is no guarantee that you're going to be solid in the church. Matter of fact, it's generally been the other way around. The attrition rate in Pasadena has probably been far higher than you would find in Midland, Texas. Midland, Odessa, excuse me. We're halfway between, so I don't want to be partial. Verse 15. Thou wast perfect in your ways from the day that you were created till iniquity was found in you. Lawlessness. Now, it seems to indicate by verse 16 that Satan, or Lucifer, as he was called then, but Satan now, was involved in some type of traffic, some type of commerce, something to do with the development of the kingdom of God. Now, if you've ever seen Star Wars, how many of you have seen Star Wars? It's a cute movie. I would recommend it. But, you know, in there, I think there's some takeoffs on the, Satan and the God controversy that mankind, the way they look at it. But, there's an interesting concept behind it that here was this Darth Vader who was trying to, control the universe. Well, that's really what took place here. This Darth Vader, or this super demon, was trying to take over the universe. And he was trying to control it. What, how? Through traffic? Trade? Through some type of commerce. Now, while we know there's no other gods, there's no other universes, this is it, this is God's creation right here. But obviously it was involved in something along that line, because it says, by the multitude of your merchandise, or your traffic, or your trade. So he was involved in something very important to God the Father, in building, in creating, in developing. It says, by the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence. He went in control, so he became violent. He actually sinned and did some type of spiritual violence. And of course, you go back to Genesis 1 and verse 2, and you find out that there was a war. There was some type of a spiritual warfare that went on between God and Lucifer. And I don't know how much of a battle it was, but I would say that it was no contest. Knowing God's wisdom, I don't think there was a great deal of resistance that Satan put up, because he's in check right now. He's in total check by God the Father, Jesus Christ. They have complete control over him and the demons. They have no power, even against us, human beings. Now, as far as physical strength, mental strength, what they have is far superior to us. If we were to go one-on-one, but God has put limitations on that. I'd say that maybe a little bit too dogmatically from what I can gather. They have more physical power than we have, because of, you see Christ working with demons and whatever, and they had a great deal of physical strength. And, of course, it's hard to say what mental powers they have, but they are. Some of them are stronger mentally than others. And this one right here was the most powerful, because he controls the other ones mentally. He's able to control them. Now, how good a job he does, I would say he's got confusion in the ranks. Because he rebelled against God. What are they going to do when they follow him? They're going to rebel against him. So you probably got, a great deal of confusion. There is one common cause they have. That is preventing the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Because when he returns, where is the happy hunting ground that they all end up going to? The big pit. They don't like the pit. They don't want to go to the pit. But that's what's going to happen. So they want to destroy God's work. They want to destroy God's people. And they want to prevent that from happening. Because they want to stay out of confinement. And it is a literal place of restraint for those spirit beings to be in. So your heart was lifted up because of your beauty, verse 17. So you're beautiful. I'm sure if we could see what God had created, we'd say, wow, you know, that's fantastic. Now, I don't know that it looked like us, human beings. I don't think so. I don't think it looked like human beings in every respect. I know that demons and Satan himself has perverted themselves, because when you get away from God and away from his law, then you lose even the proper perspective of what is good, what is right, what is balanced, what is in harmony with law. Because even in music, you got law. In color, you've got law. In everything, there's law. You break them, and you end up in trouble. So I'd say, here is Satan and the demons. They probably match, chartreuse with, burnt orange. Yeah, can you imagine that? You know, that'd look hideous. You know, it looked like somebody was sick. You know, you're sick there. And they love dissident, disjointed music. They like things that are not harmonious. Now, once again, not in every respect. And here, we find back here in verse 13 that Satan was even given the ability to be involved with music. It talks about his tabrets and the pipes that were prepared in him. So there was some type of music that would come out of this tremendous being. He was able to produce it. Well, he's the god of this world. So you've got to be the god of music. You've got to be the god of design. Now, certainly, God has allowed mankind to have a great deal of leeway and freedom to develop our own qualities and talents. You know, some of us have a quality in music. Some of us, we're able to do things with machines, and we're a mechanic or whatever. Or you're good at taking care of a home, so you're very adept at decorating and organizing a household. So, a lot of qualities we have been given. That doesn't mean that every person that does everything that's nice is, being led and inspired by the god of this world. But a lot of it is wrongly used to influence people in a negative way. And to misuse the blessings that God has created for us human beings of enjoying the physical world around us. So it can all be misused. And Satan can influence it to be a kind of a hypnotic type thing to captivate people. Once again, what did he do with Eve? Captivated her. I tell you, I walk into some department stores and I have looked around at all the tinsel. And the way they display their clothes, the way they display all the jewelry, and the multitude of merchandise. Whoops, wait a minute. That's in verse 16 here. And I thought, ghastly, it's hypnotic. You could just get carried away and just think, I want these physical things and these physical things. There's no end to it. There's no end to clothes. There's no end to furniture. There's no end to jewelry. There's no end to all these physical things. And there's more and more. And you pick up a magazine, and here's a 5,000 different ways for women to do their hair, fix their face, to lose weight, to exercise. Then you pick up another magazine, and for the men, no, it's not on how they look. It's how to make money, how to invest, how to get to the top. He's got something for all of us. To just captivate us and get us all locked up in living this physical life. Totally oriented to one thing, self. And having no concept of the real qualities of life, and that's developing divine character. So is he the God of this world? Sure, he's the God of this world. He knows how to captivate people. He knows how to get them really involved in getting their mind completely off the kingdom of God and what we're on this earth for. We're only here for a short time. Very short time. It's going to go by very quickly. And we have to respond to what God is doing in our lives, and that's developing character. 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter and verse 3. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 3. Now, here we have this super being that is able to captivate, dazzle us. We find here in 2 Corinthians 13 and or 11 in verse 3, 2 Corinthians 11, 3, Paul states, "But I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety," that's how he did it, through his subtlety, "so your mind should be corrupted, confused, gotten off of, mixed up from the simplicity that is in Christ." Simple way of life. We all know what it is. We know how to live it. We have to review how to live that life at least once a week in a form like this. God's required that. He says, now this is good. He plotted out human beings, how they could develop divine character. He said, now, let's see, I'll create a day to be approximately 24 hours, put seven days in a week. Once every 7 days, I will require people to be instructed and reviewed over some of these things. They should do that on their own throughout the week. But in an organized form, this is what I will require. God ordained it that way. So we all come together and we review the simplicity that is in Jesus Christ. We go over it. Because we are human beings and things just go out of our minds so quickly, we forget. And unless we review, we don't understand that simplicity. So here was Paul dealing with people who were being swayed, going their own way. They were being corrupted. And who was corrupting them? Was some man coming along? No, it wasn't a man. Satan, that's who was corrupting them. "For if he that comes preaches another Jesus," you understand what the truth is. You know it. You were instructed in it. You proved it. "Now if somebody else comes along preaching another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if you receive another spirit which you have not received, or another gospel which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him." Just go ahead and just go along with him, right? No, he's being sarcastic. Look, Christ gives us simplicity in the truth, and we have to stay with that simplicity. Now drop back on down to verse 14. "And no marvel," he talks about the problems, these false, in verse 13, false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ, he says. They transform, they say, you know, look, I'm an apostle of Christ. "No marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." In other words, he looks good. Probably has a lot of love. You're going to run into one of these styles, you probably have just a lot of love. Just a nice guys. I have met some real nice Protestant ministers that are in the Worldwide Church of God. Now, most of those guys are no longer around, but I mean, you know, some real nice fellas. Have nice personalities, show a lot of tenderness and kindness. Matter of fact, kind of just let everything go in the church. Just let it go. Like, you know, just no wall. No law. Love, but no wall. Or at least that's what they say is love. You can do anything you want to. Real fine. Real nice guys. And no marvel, God says, Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. "Therefore," verse 15, "it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." And, you know, most of these fellows, they don't know what they're doing. They don't have any idea that they're being used by Satan. And that's who's using them. And they look at the Word of God, and they study it, and they go through, and they don't realize that their mind is having thoughts and ideas put into it. Your mind and my mind is susceptible to a wavelength that we have very little knowledge about, except to be through, you know, God's truth and God's work. How many people in the world, now they, you know, talk about ESP and all that type of thing. Well, there's something to it. There are demons. They're able to convey messages. They're able to talk. They're able to move on this earth at rapid speeds. They're able to do fantastic feats. They're able to do what you see in all these picture shows, you know, all these weird occurrences. Yeah, they can do it all. You bet. There's limits on that. A lot of limits that God places on them. Or else they just, you know, they'd have havoc with the whole earth. They'd kill every human being they possibly get their hands on. But you see some of these mass murderers, like this guy down in Florida? You look at that snake sliding around. That is not a human being that is being dealt with down there. That's a very slick demon that has gone around and he's killed human beings. You've had a human being that lost control of its mind. You've got a demon controlling that person. He goes around and kills. It hates humans. Demons hate us. They hate human beings because of the potential of what we will be. So God has put limits on them, and they would like to attack God's church, but we have more power than they do through God's Spirit. Only through God's Spirit can we repel them. It's very clear what God brings out about that. Let's turn over to 1 Peter. 1 Peter brings that out very clearly. 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, and verse 6 we'll begin at. 1 Peter 5 and verse 6. Here's Paul talking about humbling themselves. The people in the church, or Peter's talking about humbling themselves because they were having a problem there submitting to authority, which is, once again, the crux of the whole problem of mankind. And Peter says, humble yourselves, therefore, unto the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. You submit to him. You go through this life and all the physical problems and trials and difficulties and that type of thing. And he goes on to say, verse 7, cast all your care upon him, for he cares for you. So you draw close to God. And he cares for you. But he says, now be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished by your brethren that are in the world. So you resist him. In other words, if you resist, they don't come around. Satan doesn't come around. Now, I really don't think any of us, have had a direct confrontation or direct influence from Satan himself. I think he's too busy elsewhere. I really do. He's going to be working on a little higher level than you and I. I just, you know, I think that's why we need to pray for Mr. Herbert Armstrong and all the other individuals involved in Pasadena, and that we need to ask God to protect, watch over them, rebuke Satan, keep him from attacking the church, influencing the church. He tried it. He tried it in California. Now, if you don't think that was Satan trying to destroy the church, you're naive. You do not understand what we're dealing with here in the Word of God. We are dealing with a super fantastic spirit being that has the power to influence and control people. And he does that. And scheme and work out things. I mean, he had a beautiful scheme. If you could just get all the details of the whole scheme that he had worked out. He had it down. His timing was beautiful. I mean, he had everything just the way he wanted it. And he almost pulled it off. But you've got God on his throne. God knows everything that's going on. He's aware of what Satan is trying to do, and he thwarted that attack, and he'll thwart any more attacks that come along. But it's obvious, God says in verse 9 that we can resist. So we don't have to worry about Satan coming around. If we're close to God, then there's no way that he can influence us. No way that he can bother us. no way that he can take control of our minds. Now notice here in verse 8, it says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, not only does he, you know, give the qualities of a serpent, the perversion that Satan has, the subtlety that a serpent has, but he goes on to even use the qualities of a lion to describe Satan. Now, a lion is called the king of the beast. Okay? And what it will do in order to devour its prey, most often it will lie in wait or get in a tree and wait for the herds to go underneath it in Africa, you know, the bigger lions. Here in the United States, the mountain lion, they will, you know, hide behind bushes, on rocks, in trees, and wait for an opportunity to devour its prey. Now, if you've got a herd of sheep, which God refers in the Bible to as analogous to who? The brethren in the church. You got this herd of sheep, and one of the sheep happens to wander off. Now, it's the job of the sheep herder, right, to make sure that sheep is not going to go over the hill and over the bushes and go over and get in trouble. Because it gets away from the protection of the sheep herder, and you got mountain lions out there going to kill the thing. So sheep herder is supposed to, you know, care for the flock. Now, some sheep are, you know, they're headstrong, and they want to do what they want to do. So here they go, wander off, you know, always trying to get that sheep and get it back. Come on, get back in there with the rest of them. Well, what if you got one going this way, you got one going that way, you got one going over here and over there? You got sheep going all over the place. Well, man, you're running and trying to put out fires. Like Dean Blackwell's doing. He's running around trying to put out fires. Save all these ministers from going over the hill. Save these sheep from getting out there and getting devoured by the lion. What the analogy is that, look, Satan is lying in wait, and they wander over there, and bam, they get away from the body. What's the body doing? Well, we're all unified. We're involved in the work. We're 100% behind Mr. Armstrong. We're about the business of spreading the gospel to the world as a witness before the end of the age. We're trying to prepare ourselves so that we can be mature enough to marry Christ at His return. We're doing that. That's what the body's doing. Now, we got some people, I don't know. You know, I'm going to read a little bit about what Cecil Battles has to say about this planet. You know, we could possibly go to. And it looks interesting. Now, I tell you, you know, one of the most interesting speakers I would say that I've run into is Cecil Battles. I mean, he was very, very, he had a good vocabulary. He was a good speaker. I worked with him for a year and a half. And, I'd say personally, there, you know, were some very serious problems, but his speaking, he was very good, very good. Yeah, he's captivated people, and they want to look into it, and they're out there being devoured, being destroyed by the lion. Who? It's not Cecil. He doesn't know what he's doing. He has no idea what he's doing. He's being manipulated. He's being used. Being used by whom? By Satan. The lion, the snake. Now, they'll lie in wait. They know how to camouflage themselves. They know how to use all of the tremendous talents and abilities that they've developed over the years. The way Satan is, he lies in wait. Someone wanders off, get a little sidetrack, wham. And also what they like to do, they like to even attack the herd. They'll come in, they'll attack, they'll come right in, bam, they'll just hit it. They'll bombard it. Well, we've had congregations that get unloaded with all kinds of written material from this guy or that guy, and, you know, here's all these letters coming in, and people, you know, well, I wonder what he says. Or your next, you know, your very fine friends in the church or your relatives, they say, oh, now did you know about this? And you hear about this? And so they start unloading and bombarding one another, and you get bombarded. Right into the middle of the flock. Now, what a lion will do is he will attack a herd. You know what he picks out? He picks out the weakest one of the herds. In the herd, he picks it out. He's able to spot it. He's got tremendous vision, tremendous sight. You know, we can't see the spirit world. Well, Satan and all these demons, they know our spiritual, what would you say, our spiritual IQ. They know how spiritually sound we are. Because, you know, as it says here, if we resist, then they're going to be repelled. Satan can't be, come around. It's like, you know, put this repellent on. And, you know, it drives off the dogs. I might mention last week we had a problem in the restroom back here with a fellow that has some dog repellent. And that was kind of sprayed around. And I'd like to find out who did that. Appreciate if anyone knows that they let me know so we could take care of the problem. We don't want that taking place. A lot of things we don't want to want taking place, and we're going to take care of them as they come up. But you know, if it's some little kid or if it's some teenager, I would hope it's not an adult. I would the benefit of the doubt I would give to the adult. But somebody obviously went in there and sprayed all this all over and soaked the fellow's clothes, and we don't want that going on. So please let me know who it was, and we'll be very nice about it. But if I have to keep searching and searching and searching and searching, and finally we find out, then it's going to be more serious. We don't want that. We don't want any confrontations like that. So please let me know who it was. Okay, so we've got this repellent that drives off Satan's demons. They don't come around. We resist them. So they're not going to attack us because we're strong. See, there's strength there. But here's a lion. He can look at a herd. He's able to watch and see the various habits of certain animals. And they can tell when there's a weak link, and they'll pick it out. Maybe you've seen it on films, on television. You'll see this lion. And they have some tremendous films where they're showing this lion chasing this, you know, whatever it might be, a gazelle or whatever. And here it is, or antelope, and man, this thing, this lion just, he picks out one, stays right on it, keeps right after it. Thing's going, and bam, hits it on the back, breaks its neck. Generally how they do it, they'll get the neck, bam, break the neck. Kill it. Knows which is the weakest. Doesn't pick out the strongest, you know, the most dominant of the herd. Picks out the weakest. And that's what Satan would like to do with the congregations, and that's what he has done. And that's why we have people fall, because they aren't strong enough to resist against this brilliant being that knows how to deceive. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 15, and it's obvious when God goes through the writings that he gives us to read from, what he's referring to here, it's not men that come up with reasonings of men. These people are inspired. They are definitely inspired. You're either inspired of God, or you're inspired of the serpent. You're inspired of Satan. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 15. See here that Paul is referring to some problems in the church. He says, "For some are already turned aside after whom?" Who did they turn aside after? George, Fred, Bob, Satan. Turned aside after. Now, how many of you have ever met anyone that says, "You know, I go to Satan's church down here on the corner, and you know, we have these services where we worship Satan." They do have a church. They do have a church where, you know, you go in and you actually worship Satan, which is you might say the epitome of Satan's disgust for God, and he flaunts that before God. He gets human beings. He says, "Look at this guy." And here's it, you got these people out there worshiping him. Blatantly, openly. Now, in actuality, isn't everyone who doesn't obey God, aren't they worshiping Satan? Sure. Because they believe his way is better than God's way. Because God says, "Hey, this is what you got to do." I'd like for the teens up there to quiet down, okay? But you fellows and gals, you can talk after I get done, all right? So, the rest of the services, the back row. Be quiet. So, you know, here's Satan, and he's going to influence these people. He's going to control them. And he's going to say, "Well, now look, we're of God. We're of God. We're not of Satan." Turn over here to, just turn back a chapter. Turn back to 1 Timothy 4 and verse 1. Now the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith. They're going to leave what? What do you mean the faith? This individual out here in where? West Texas somewhere has this belief in God, and he's out there doing what he feels God has revealed to him. No, you leave the faith. You leave the church. That's what it's talking about. Now, the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to what? Seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Demons. Spirit beings that have their own approach, their own even personality. And you can see this in religion. You can see it in even the guys that have left God's church. They'll give heed to certain philosophies and ideas and approaches. And they're all different. You have Dr. Martin. You have Cecil Battles. You have Ted Armstrong. Some of them look good. Some of them are a little, you know, way out. What they had this one fellow, I forget his name, where he said, we're the Laodicean church. He says, come join us. We're the Laodicean church. Oh, boy, I had it. You know, people joined the thing. They joined it. They said, hey, great, you know, I want to be a Laodicean. Well, you got people that will worship Satan? Sure, you got people that will join a church. Well, they're going to be Laodicean? Yeah, sure, fine. You got people to do anything. When you get on a wavelength, it's hard to get off of it. I don't care how weird or perverted it is. When you open up your mind, then you're letting these demons come in. That's what these people were doing in the church, letting some demon come in. You have different styles. You have the holy roller style, the emotional demons, you know. Blah, 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 they like, or you have the sarcastic ones, all right? The ones who have kind of it's a nasty sound to their voice. Like this Ernest Angley. I don't know if you've ever seen him. How many of you have seen him on TV? Oh, he must be out in Southern California, I guess. But he has this kind of nasty, sound to his voice. And he brings these people up on stage, and they all stroll by and everything. And he'll smack them in the forehead because they've, got something wrong with them. They're sick, They're really sick is what's wrong with them. But anyway, some of these people, they're really just sincere. Really sincere. They're sick and they want some help, and they go up there, and this guy, he says, think what you need, and smacks them in the forehead, and man, they fly over backwards, and they got these two guys there to grab them when they hit the deck. They don't let them hit, the actual deck. They catch them before they hit the floor, and he's smacking them. And it's just a smack against God's blessings for his church of healing, making fun of it, making light of the blessings that we have from God and the power that God bestows upon his people. Likes to do it. Likes to just make fun of everything that God stands for. Doctrines of demons. You've got all kinds. You've got different styles for different people. Because we all have different natures, don't we? Some of us would be more sophisticated. We like the more sophisticated demons. Hello, how are you? They like to go into Greek philosophy. Well, we had that out of college. Philosophy of mankind. And it was creeping into the church, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You've got to have this image of yourself being successful, and you get to drive for that. And it was just kind of sweeping through the church. Everybody was picturing themselves as, I'm going to make it in this life, and I'm going to be a success. Now, once again, we don't want to go to the other extreme and say everybody ought to be a ding-a-ling. Don't ever strive for anything. Just be a washout in life. Let your family go hungry. Your wife walk around barefoot and pregnant. And, you're a success. No, we don't want that either. But you've got all types. You've got the ones that come in and say, we love. So they appeal to emotionalism, and the people that are a little bit maybe more sensitive. Maybe they've had their feelings hurt in the church. You're going to be in God's church. You're going to have your feelings hurt. I mean, you're going to have, if you haven't, we got a bunch of teens up there. Got your feelings hurt today, And we all get our feelings hurt. I'm going to say a lot of things that affect a lot of you adults more than what, affected them. We're going to get our feelings hurt. But you've got to realize, look, being sensitive, that's not where it's at. We've got to obey God's commandments. Do what is right. Look, if we're wrong or we're mistreated, the Bible has a lot to say about that. So take it in stride. Keep right on, plugging on along. And we'll be able to arrive at the proper reward. Notice what it says over here in Ephesians. Well, first, before I go there, let me quickly get this very important scripture here in 2 John. 2 John. Talking about, okay, you got these demons that bring doctrines. Now they're going to try and, you know, get us sidetracked. Well, it's very clear what God says about that. Look, if you want to open your door and you want to invite a demon in, well, fine. You know, that's up to you. I'm telling you, don't do it. Because once they're in, they're hard to get rid of. They really are. You know, Christ had his apostles, they were going out and they were casting these demons out of certain people. They came back and said, well, you know, these won't leave. We command them, we do everything you told us to. He said, well, these come out by prayer and fasting. A little tougher. We got some tough ones here. And brethren, we're dealing with some toughies, all right? Keep that in mind. We're dealing with some real strong, powerful demons. Because the other ones are going to be out there taking care of the world. Because, you know, the world's gone anyway. So they're going to be out there having their fun and games. And they like to possess people. And they like to do all kinds of crazy, weird things. Because they've perverted themselves. And they're crazy and weird. So the smart ones, the sharp ones, the strong ones are going to be attacking God's people. Keep that in mind. And here's what God says. Look, if another doctrine, you get something that's maybe a little interesting. You want to know a little bit about it. Well, here's what God says. And boy, you know, there's a lot of people in the church saying, well, I don't know, you know, we ought to be able to refute all the gainsayer. And that's speaking to the ministry. Say, be able to refute the gainsayer? Talking to Timothy. He's supposed to do that. That's the job for, we're the professionals. Maybe you heard that on TV. You know, but you really, I mean, we're trained. We teach as we have been taught. We're aware of these things. God gives us extra added wisdom and strength and ability to spot this, to work with it. Not the lay members. We don't go around, okay, let's see, what's Cecil have to say here? And how about GTA? He wants to say, oh, he's got hurt feelings. He's down there crying. And he wants us to come cry with him, you know. Oh, feel sorry. Poor Ted. Ted didn't get his way once again, you know. He grows up and he doesn't agree with Dad, so he, you know, he pouts and goes off and does his own thing. Well, you know, I don't care what it is. God says here clearly, 2 John 10, if there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, okay? Can't get any clearer. Receive him not into your house. Don't let it in.